Hi, and welcome to the How to Teach Reading podcast, where we will be discussing everything related to the teaching of reading, spelling, and writing of English. So wherever you are and however you're involved, if you are interested in the teaching of reading, then this is the podcast for you. Hi, and welcome to How to Teach Reading. Now, this episode is going to be based on an article that I wrote, and I've chosen it because it covers some core concepts and terms and definitions that I thought it would be useful to share before we move forward so that we can hopefully better understand each other. Now, the premise of that article, and thus for this episode, is a question. And that question is this: is phonics a method for teaching reading? Now, of course, this is highly contrived and I can't hear your responses, so I'm going to have to guess what they might be, and I'll base that on how I see phonics being discussed on social media. And so I'm going to say that most of you would likely answer, yes, absolutely, phonics is a method for teaching reading. Now, the fact that I have answered my own question on your behalf in this way probably has most of you suspecting that my answer could be a little different. And you'd be right. But that's not because I don't like phonics. It's because the language that most people use to talk about phonics is inaccurate and very misleading. Because the simple fact is that the answer to the question, is phonics a method for teaching reading, is no. And that's because phonics is not a method. It is far more accurate and certainly more useful to understand phonics as being a body of knowledge and skills. And it's the body of knowledge and skills that is needed to decode written English, which, although I'm aware it isn't clear or obvious to everyone, is a phonics-based writing system. Yes, it has a layer, a big layer of morphology on top, but at its essence, it is a phonics-based system. Phonics is not, therefore, what is called a pedagogy or a method of teaching, but is in fact essential content or knowledge. It is something that needs to be taught, not a method for teaching something else. Now, this distinction is a critical one because the choice you are making when deciding whether or not to teach phonics or how you're going to teach phonics is not actually which method to use to teach children how to read, but whether to directly and explicitly teach this element of reading. Now, this isn't a random reframing of the discussion on my part. It's a crucial clarification that puts phonics squarely back into the frame that it has always sat in. And hopefully, it means that we can discuss with greater clarity the various pros and cons, as one might see it, of taking different approaches to the teaching of reading. Okay, so having made this point, what then is the significance of understanding phonics as content? Why do we need to teach it? Well, children need to know and understand phonics because study after study has shown us that all fluent readers of English, and whether they realise it or not, decode as they read. Now, I'm a fluent reader of English, and I'm sure that many of you listening are as well. And we are simply not aware of decoding while reading, precisely because we are so fluent that it becomes almost effortless. And this isn't cherry-picking research that suits my assertion. This is as near settled science as you get. Decoding really is how all competent readers read. In fact, Even our ability to build a bank of fluency-enhancing, instantly recognized sight words. Now, sight words is another topic around which there are also significant misunderstandings, which I will explore in another episode. But safe to say for now that even our ability to build this bank of sight words is inextricably linked to and completely reliant on our knowledge of what is called the alphabetic principle and our ability to bond the pronunciation of each word through decoding to the spelling or the orthographic map of each word. Okay, so I'm saying that phonics is content and that it is important. Well, what part then of reading does phonics comprise? I mean, is it all that we need to teach? Well, to answer that, I think it would be useful to consider the simple view of reading, first published by Goff and Tunmer in 1986. Now, this overview of the reading process presents reading very simply as a mathematical equation, where decoding multiplied by oral language comprehension equals or results in reading comprehension. And reading comprehension is, of course, our ultimate goal. Now, remembering what you can from school about the nature of multiplicative relationships, we can imagine two scenarios that illustrate what this decoding times language relationship tells us. In the first, we'll imagine a child who is completely fluent at decoding, and we'll give them a perfect score of 1 for word identification. But this child has no oral language, no understanding of the words, so that would be a 0 for oral language comprehension. Well, 1 times 0 equals 0, and so the result would be 0 reading comprehension. Conversely, imagine a child with no ability to decode whatsoever, so a 0 for decoding, but with perfect oral language comprehension, so a score of 1, a perfect 1 this time. Well, in this situation, it's the other way round, 0 times 1, but again, of course, it equals 0, and again, we have 0 reading comprehension. Now, while the simple view does what it says and provides a simplified overview, it neatly encapsulates the essential process and shows how both factors or both components are absolutely vital and how they interact with each other in order to achieve reading comprehension. Dr. Hollis Scarborough's Reading Rope, first published in 2001, is another excellent illustration of what it takes to read with understanding. Now, this is going to be a little trickier to describe, so do bear with me. Please imagine a landscape-shaped diagram. On the left, you have the ends of 2 separate lengths of rope, each with a few substrands. The top rope represents language comprehension and its component strands of background knowledge, vocabulary, language structures, and so on. While the bottom rope represents word recognition with its component strands of decoding and phonemic awareness, and so on. Now, as we move towards the right of the diagram, and this is moving over time, these two separate ropes begin to intertwine. And again, over time, the rope starts to consolidate, becoming tighter and stronger. And in the end, it becomes one single, tightly bound, well-consolidated rope that represents skilled reading. So again, just like in the simple view of reading, we can see that both of these elements, both of these factors, all of these strands are vital. And both of these aspects, the decoding or word identification and the oral language comprehension and everything that integrates to build that, they both need deliberate and often explicit teaching in a curriculum that's been designed with this understanding. And schools need to excel in both aspects if the children who attend these schools are to flourish and become the best readers they possibly can be. So both the reading rope and the simple view tell us something useful about how reading works. But to further understand reading, we really need to first understand writing. Now, it might seem a bit strange to think about it in this way, but writing is a technology. And it's a technology that was invented in some human cultures over the last few thousand years, which is a very short time in evolutionary terms. Also, in most of the cultures that did invent a writing system, until very recently, reading and writing was a skill acquired only by a few scribes or a select elite. The point being that while writing is an extension of our natural ability to speak, there is again a critical distinction to draw between them. Humans universally evolved with the ability to communicate through speech. It clearly conferred a survival advantage. We did not, however, evolve an ability to read and write. And this matters a lot. In the words of evolutionary psychologist David C. Geary, how to speak or walk, for example, is what's called biologically primary knowledge, or knowledge that we have evolved to learn easily. Such knowledge is characterized by not needing to be taught. Our brains are literally hardwired to acquire such knowledge, and we merely need the opportunity to learn it. Everything else, however, and that includes reading and writing, is what's called biologically secondary knowledge. And compared to biologically primary knowledge, this biologically secondary knowledge is much harder to learn. We're not hardwired to just pick it up, and it is characterized by needing to be taught. Now, the writing systems that were invented, so we have different cultures inventing writing systems, and these writing systems also varied in nature. Some forms of writing are what we call logographic, where a picture or a symbol or a character represents a whole word or a syllable. Other languages developed a way of representing or encoding the individual speech sounds, and English, like its European counterparts, is of this latter type. And written English is essentially an alphabetic code. Now, in such an alphabetic code or phonics-based writing system, a grapheme is the written representation of a phoneme. In other words, a grapheme is the spelling of a speech sound. And in a simple writing system, a unique grapheme or spelling will only ever correspond to one speech sound, and in reverse, each of the language's speech sounds are only ever represented by one unique grapheme. Now, such systems as this are easy to learn. Finnish, for example, has a very simple spelling system or orthography, and thus Finnish children are usually fluent spellers and readers within a few weeks or months of starting school. In English, however, while there are some simple phoneme-grapheme correspondences, most phonemes are represented by more than one spelling, and most spellings are used to represent more than one sound. Over time, for various reasons, the English system has become very complex, and it has a deep and, to the casual observer perhaps, almost impenetrable orthography, which is why teaching English takes more time, more attention, and more expertise than teaching other simpler writing systems might. So, we have a complex writing system. And if this complicated map of how English is encoded and decoded is the content, then that begs the question as to how we should teach it. And the simple, if incredibly glib answer is, given the critical importance of reading, really well. Thankfully, while phonics can appear fiendishly complicated, it literally becomes child's play when broken down into small steps and observable patterns, and is presented in a systematic way, building from simple to complex. Phonics, being by nature multifaceted, multisensory, and highly practical, lends itself extremely well to such treatment. This is what good systematic phonics programs do, and it is this that is the pedagogical aspect of phonics. So now we have finally arrived at the question as to what method to use to teach reading or teach this element of reading. And what this boils down to is the extent to which you think that this should be directly or explicitly taught or not. Now, consciously choosing not to teach phonics as the foundation of word identification, but instead to immerse children in language and print in the hope that they deduce how to read, is adopting what might be described, and is certainly described in research in academia, as a minimally guided approach. Now, sometimes a little incidental phonics is taught in such scenarios. That's when you take the opportunity to teach some phonics when it arises. But this is often as a last resort. Instead, when children can't read words, they are taught to use a variety of compensatory strategies, such as guessing from pictures or initial letters or things like that, or what they think to be the context. In fact, this has been the preeminent way to teach reading in most English-speaking countries for very many decades. And if you've been around a while, you might tell me this can work. You or your child or children that you've taught learn to read without any or with very little phonics. You might say, you just need lots of stories, being read to, sharing books, sharing a love of books, and so on. Well, yes, it is true that some children, if immersed in a print and language-rich environment, which, by the way, they absolutely do need to have, however they're being taught their phonics, they need a print and language-rich environment. But yes, some children, if immersed in a print and language-rich environment, will apparently learn to read with very little direct phonics instruction. But we need to qualify this statement. Firstly, while a few might seem to learn to read very well, but more on those children in a moment, many others might only learn to read well enough to get by at school and not attract any particular attention or support. But they won't have learned to read nearly as well or as effortlessly as they might have learned had they had explicit instruction. Indeed, many children who excel at school and are considered excellent readers only hit the limits of their reading ability at high school or university when they meet more challenging material than their imperfect deductions about how English works can cope with. Many hitherto high achievers are only diagnosed dyslexic in the tertiary phase of their education. Secondly, such children will usually have considerably impaired spelling compared to pupils who've been explicitly taught the alphabetic code. Reading is fuzzy compared to spelling. Children can infill decoding gaps with context guesses or can just ignore words that they cannot decipher. But spelling is much more exacting. There's only one way to spell each word, and the evidence is clear that children who are explicitly taught how English writing works spell much more accurately than those who are not. Now, I realise that the status of spelling has become somewhat eroded in recent years, but people forget that it is the flip side of reading. And when most reading, bar in the very early years, is conducted silently by children, a child's spelling is an incredibly useful window onto their reading. And I have to tell you, a child with poor spelling will likely read much less well than you think they do. But the final and most important point is this. The children who appear to learn to read well by merely being immersed in books and language haven't learned to read so well because of how reading was taught, but in spite of the fact that it wasn't. Such children will have been born doubly blessed. Not only will they have had ample access to books and language, but they will also have inherited a neurobiology that means that they are adept at phonemic awareness, blending and segmenting sounds, phoneme manipulation, rapid naming, symbol sound pattern matching, and so on and so on. So much so that the phonic-based nature of written English becomes at least subconsciously apparent to them without the direct guidance that most children need. They are able to grasp the alphabetic principle and intuit an approximation of how the language works. Now, please note that this is not the same as saying that reading is natural or biologically primary to these children. It is simply that they got lucky and that their brains, possibly with a few opportune clues pushing them in the right direction, their brains were able to adapt relatively easily to the demands of reading English. And as a double note, these children are not in any way disadvantaged or held back by directly teaching them the phonics that they'd otherwise have to work out for themselves. All children benefit from being taught directly. Sadly, most children are not as lucky as the children that I just spoke about, and they absolutely need to be taught effectively and efficiently and directly if they are to have any hope of achieving their educational and life potential. In their 2006 paper, Why Minimal Guidance During Instruction Does Not Work, Kirshner, Sweller and Clark concluded that not only is unguided instruction normally less effective, there is also evidence that it may have negative results when students acquire misconceptions or incomplete or disorganized knowledge. Now, as an experienced dyslexia tutor, this statement just leaps out at me. In fact, every reading tutor who understands the role of decoding and phonics will tell you that they often spend as much time dismantling their students' damaging and unhelpful misconceptions about reading as they do teaching them how to read. And sadly, I have to report, this damage is often permanent. The child who must be retaught how to read after falling behind will often never develop into as fluent a reader as they might have become had phonics been taught well in the first place. The rich get richer, poor get poorer Matthew effect compounds this misery. Now, the Matthew effect was first described and applied by Keith Stanovich to reading, and I will attempt to explain it here. Children who find reading easy tend to enjoy reading and so read more. And this results in improved fluency, vocabulary, and background knowledge. And so they progress faster. They find reading even easier, more enjoyable, and so it's easy to see how a virtuous cycle might develop. The child who struggles, however, will likely do less reading than is needed and will then fall behind their peers in both decoding and language. Now, it's important there to note that they will fall behind in language as well, as books and reading very quickly become the primary way that children learn new vocabulary and new language. I know most people expect it's going to come from oral language, but books very quickly become a vital source of new language. So these struggling children will fall behind in both aspects. And the gap between them and their progressing peers will grow, as you might expect, will their disdain for reading. And so a vicious downward cycle can ensue. However, when phonics is taught well, even those children with apparently little aptitude for decoding, and there will be many children who struggle, will never need to struggle to the point that a negative cycle develops. Well-designed phonics curricula ensure that steps are small and recursive, and the child is only ever expected to read what they have first been given the knowledge and skills to read. Every child is thus set up for and can then be inspired by success. The design and the delivery of the phonics curriculum is thus crucial. Hence, you will often see phonics specified as systematic synthetic phonics. Now, synthetic here does not mean fake. It indicates that phonics should be taught by starting at the individual grapheme phoneme level. This avoids the hard-to-shift misconceptions that can arise when a so-called analytic phonics route is taken. Now, that is where words are first learned as whole word pictures, and the children learn a bank of these whole word picture words, which are subsequently analysed into component parts. Systematic is a little easier to understand, and this means following an intricately planned, detailed phonics curriculum that has been carefully designed to avoid the misconceptions or incomplete or disorganized knowledge that was referred to by Kirshner and his colleagues. So while I have been at pains to explain that phonics is vital content, it is hopefully also clear that how it is taught is equally crucial. It is not enough to add some incidental phonics here and there, or to teach a basic amount and simply assume that all will be well. Now, as an aside, I've noticed that it has become increasingly common for balanced literacy or whole language advocates, or actually I'm not sure what language to use here because people keep changing the way that they describe themselves. Perhaps I should just say people who are not advocates of systematic synthetic phonics. So these people, it's become increasingly common for them to claim that they do teach phonics systematically. And this is done in an effort, presumably, to persuade teachers, schools, and policymakers that their programs meet evidence-informed standards. Now, it's not so much a problem in the UK, where we do have programs that are validated and we know which programs are thought to meet government standards, but in other parts of the world, it is a fuzzier picture. So let's be really clear here. When systematic phonics is specified, it means that phonics or decoding should be directly taught as the first and only way to identify words when reading, and that this should be done in the systematic way that I described earlier. Teaching some phonics as part of a wider multi-strategy approach to word identification is not what is meant by the term systematic phonics, even if you could argue that the phonics element of such a program is being systematically taught. You know, for example, every lesson includes some phonics. Okay, aside over, you have been listening for a while now. Why is this important? Well, over the decades where minimal guidance in the teaching of reading prevailed, huge numbers of children across the English-speaking world left school functionally illiterate. And this is a tragedy that continues today. And a very large proportion of these will have been casualties of the inadequate teaching of phonics. And this is simply untenable. The ability to read is crucial, many would argue an inalienable right. It is the key that unlocks access to every other part of the curriculum and a huge world beyond, and we cannot leave it to chance. And I cannot overemphasize what a crucial equity issue this is. Children from deprived backgrounds are the most likely to be damned by the inadequate teaching of phonics. They are the least likely to have access to good schools, the least likely to have access to books and rich language, and the least likely to have parents with the expertise to tutor them themselves or the money to pay someone else to do so. Now, if you've got this far and are still struggling to see why I find the distinction between viewing phonics as content and phonics as a way to teach reading so important, it is simply this: that someone who thinks that phonics is just one way to teach reading likely thinks, mistakenly, that phonics is just one way to read. There is no other way to read English fluently, and it is imperative for all children to know and be able to use phonics to the absolute best of their ability. If this were better understood, then I am sure that all would do their best to teach phonics as well and as comprehensively as possible. Well, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to get in touch, please do. You can visit my blog, which is howtoteachreading.org.uk, or I will put some contact information in the program notes. I'm also available on Twitter as @govtutor. That's govtutor. I'd love to have some feedback, and I'd love to hear your questions, because those are things that I would like to address in future episodes. So anyway, I do hope that you'll be clicking subscribe, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks and goodbye.